All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, May 30th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a cloudy 64 degrees, but very springy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Reprogramming Life. DNA, microbes, CRISPR, pandemics, and bioterror. We spent about two and a half weeks looking at bacteria, microbes, and how they interact not only inside of our guts with our brain, but also in the environment and some of the new technologies that are spinning out over this CRISPR Cas9 that Georgie Porgy Church has won the patenting rights to. He has been working with DARPA and the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering to create all kinds of new quote-unquote cures to be utilized on you, me, Nana, and Johnny under the 21st Century Cures Act. We discovered the DARPA now has a program that they are trying to spur, quote-unquote, innovation for having a company discover how to stop Pandemic X from taking hold within a 60-day window. George, Bill Gates, almost forgot him, how could I, has also talked about how, unfortunately, within the next 10 to 15 years, it appears that the world is overpopulated and greenhouse gassed as it is. It's going to have some sort of pandemic, whether naturally or unnaturally, whether it be a rogue agent or potentially another country. We found out that Clapper, I was calling him Clappy the other night, it's a good name for him, came out in front of the Senate subcommittee hearing talking about how, yes, he declared CRISPR a WMD. And since they have democratized CRISPR across the planet, that added gene sent out 60,000 copies to anyone and everyone who wanted it. And it can be reproduced endlessly without any lossiness, like you used to have in the old days when you were duplicating things such as videotapes or cassette tapes. You can copy this endlessly and utilize this CRISPR to gene edit in mommy's back bedroom or garage in New York City. And we also discovered way back when that you can even buy a lot of these components online on eBay for just a few bucks in order to do this. Well, there's a story that came out of the New York Times that I ran across probably a month ago, and I've had this queued up waiting to find a place to slip this in, but I think this is it. Out of the New York Times from 1982. Quite a long time ago there. And, you know, we've talked many times about our biological warfare program here in the United States over in Plum Island and Fort Detrick, Maryland, that we supposedly, quote unquote, ended it with the inking of whatever that accord was. I never can remember it, but that's all right. Look it up. By Nixon and a lot of the other world superpowers. I think we finally inked it in 72, but it actually was ratified in 69, kind of waiting for our signatory. But basically, what Nixon stated at the end when he signed it was that we were still going to maintain a posture of biodefense through vaccination. See, I've tied back to that many, many times before to show how, yes, this whole vaccine conundrum that we have, where they've been pushing this oxytocin button on mothers and pitting vaccinated versus unvaccinated families against each other. Of course, the moms that have been groomed to believe what they are told without ever questioning some of the ingredients I mean, back in the old days, we were just looking at things such as thimerosal. But, you know, as we dug a little bit deeper, we found out that there were recombinant proteins in there as well, from animals, from monkeys, pigs, cows, bovine serums. We've even dug deeper to discover that, yes, even a Stanford, I don't even know what she was, some sort of geneticist looking at vaccination through the guise of the fact that there was aborted fetal tissue in some of the cell lines. We actually read about that story the other day about whether or not you own your cells. We found out that woman back in 1958, I think it said, she never gave permission for those cells from that aborted tissue to be utilized. And they messaged her, sent her a letter years later, kind of asking for a back permission to say, because they said, hey, you know what? I just want you to know your cells are being utilized to save millions across the planet. She said, what? What cells? They're like, oh, remember those ones way back when? So, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things. We've even talked about live versus killed virus in some of these vaccinations and how when they utilize live viruses, a lot of times they will dose these intranasally. We found out there's something called vaccine shedding that happens where it ends up that it isn't the people who are vaccinated who are at risk from the unvaccinated. It ends up actually being the reverse. That the unvaccinated or those with weakened immune systems or pregnant, elderly, those types of individuals or immunocompromised. And there are many, you know, people who are immunocompromised, they always think AIDS. But remember, autoimmune diseases, of which we've had an explosion over the last 20 years, myself included, being one of those statistics. Immunocompromised individuals can be a myriad of people, and an autoimmune disease can attack any part of your body. That's where your immune system turns against itself. But any of us individuals, and there are things you can do to boost them up. Good nutrition, number one. That lactoferrin has worked really well for me. Make sure you take all your super greens and things of that nature, and you can fix yourself up. But anyway, you know, we go back looking at some of the new technologies now, some of this DARPA stuff, to cure Pandemic X would be utilizing these quote-unquote shape-shifting immune systems, these living therapeutics, these bacteria that have been programmed as if they were a computer, utilizing technologies such as CRISPR. But remember, there are lots of other different types now of experimentation going on to manipulate the immune system, utilizing T cells and things of that nature. But as we have all of this rolling out, and we know now the history of our biological warfare program, and remember, we also had an entomological warfare program, and that would be utilizing insects as disease vectors to spread bioterror weaponry. We start looking now at some of the things that are going on. One of the things that just struck me is a perfect example of the combination of entomological warfare and crop warfare, and that was the third thing that was going on at Plum Island and Fort Detrick, would be the DARPA Insect Allies Program. Remember, we've talked about that a bunch of times. They are tinkering with infecting bacteria with phages, or bacteriophages, they call them. A bacteriophage happens to be a virus that infects a bacteria. But they are making certain that this bacteria that they are infecting with a bacteriophage is a type of bacteria that will infect an insect. So they genetically modify the bacteria, do whatever they want to it, bloop. Then they infect the insect, and they make sure that it is an insect that will target the exact type of crops as a food source that they want to take out, or that they want to inoculate, or that they want to poison. So DARPA takes a bacteriophage, infects a bacteria, takes that bacteria, infects an insect, takes that insect, infects it loose on a crop. That bug does what it does best. It eats the crop. But when it eats the crop and it shares its digestive juices with the leaves of the crop that it is eating, those digestive juices, quote unquote, infect the plant with the bacteria that has been genetically modified through the virus, the bacteriophage, and now it infects the crop. Now, the big question is, what happens when animals and humans eat that crop? Well, we don't quite know yet. But here's what we do know. This is doing live, real-time genetic modification utilizing some sort of living, quote-unquote, therapeutic on plants rather than animals. And like I've suggested, there may even be somewhere down the line where it can be passed, because we do know we are what we eat. I read a story about that the other day, and we dug way into that a long time ago. Even with epigenetics and eating junk food can affect your future progeny because of switches that it flips, your RNAi, that it flips within your body. Your body absorbs everything you ingest, and things that you come in contact to that breach somehow that blood-brain barrier, or maybe even your skin barrier, intranasal, dermal, sublingual, and your gut are all ways that we can have contact with pathogens that can sneak directly into the bloodstream. Well, this story from 1982, if we ever needed any more confirmation of all these things that we have talked about in the historic origins as to our federal government being involved in biowarfare on the homeland, no less. Remember, Plum Island has been moved now to Manhattan, Kansas, right in the middle of Tornado Alley at the University of Kansas itself, until they finish building the new facility. The U.S. continues defensive germ warfare research September 7th, 1982. So we inked that agreement in 1972. It was officially drafted in 1969. And this is in 1982, right as we were beginning the days of GMO foods. Remember, this is genetic modification. Whether it be plant, animal, or human, this is what they are doing. CRISPR technology allows them to genetically modify things on the fly, utilizing bacteria or bacteriophages to infect bacteria. They can deliver payloads to the body to physically snip out pieces of DNA. We read some examples the other day, eating HIV and Zika like a Pac-Man from this new CRISPR pill. We have CRISPR antibiotics too that'll blast your gut with whatever these little bioreactors are producing. Bioreactors that they have programmed to produce byproducts. It could be natural. We found out there are gut bacteria out there that produce antibiotics naturally, but who knows? Now, as they are cracking all these codes of life, DARPA, the DARPA lady called it a long time ago. She had said that we were going to terraform Mars and we wanted to be able to push a button and create life on the fly. You know, this is what these genome projects have given them the capability to do now. Well, back to 1982, let's see how far they were. The United States officially renounced biological warfare in 1969. Remember, they didn't ink it until 72, and they always misquote the year, but look it up. But here, in a small corner of the military base where the American germ warfare effort was located, Army scientists are still involved in what they call Medical Defensive Biowarfare Research. And this would be in Frederick, Maryland. With little public attention, the researchers are trying to discover vaccines, or antidotes to any germ weapon that might be used against American troops. Of course, it's always for the troops, but it's also going to be for the homeland, I warned you. The effort is based in a two-story Army laboratory at the corner of Fort Detrick, a sprawling base that once headquartered the American chemical and biological warfare efforts. This is where Dr. Huber worked, by the way. Army officials are sensitive about describing their work, which has continued since 1969, when President Nixon renounced American use of biological weapons and ordered the destruction of existing arms. But he said that the defense efforts would continue to guard against possible germ attacks by the enemy. Gene splicing research. What we are doing is uniquely medical, says Colonel Richard Barquist, the doctor who heads the Army Medical Institute of Infectious Diseases. We're involved in medical defensive research, he says. And part of the research here involves recombatant DNA, also known as gene splicing. Now, guys, all I gotta say is I almost fell off my chair because this was 1982. Now, we've already been looking, once we started digging into some of the strange things we're discovering about that bacillus bacteria, that spore-forming bacteria, that there seems to be a lot of argument online between doctors and older research back from the 80s and 90s compared to newer research. We're back in the 80s and 90s. They actually were raising an alarm bell about bacillus and the fact that it's so super hard to kill because it is a spore and it can go dormant, but how fast it replicates and how it can produce major toxins, like one, of course, we've talked about a lot and probably was a lot of this genetic research going on in this Fort Detrick, Maryland, lab, was anthrax. Remember, we had the 575 samples that they thought were killed, but whoops, they weren't. We don't know what strain of anthrax that was, but just saying, anthrax has always been one of those historic bioterror agents that the military has, of course, been working on coming up with quote-unquote cures for the military and maybe for you in the strategic stockpile if we were ever quote-unquote attacked. Well, as they're messing around with this stuff, remember, 1982 was just as GMO was rolling into the forefront of science. And we know that at Plum Island, they messed with crops and they messed with farm animals, ways to kill them easily as well. Just be aware that this, honestly, I don't even know how far this could possibly be. I mean, if they've been messing with bacillus bacteria, which is a soil bacteria, which you do find in animals, you do find that farm animals tend to get anthrax infections naturally at times from just eating plants in the soil. We don't really know if infections, quote-unquote infections, with this type of bacteria can be passed down to people who consume it. Has anyone ever researched that? I don't think I've ever seen any research on that. We also found out that bacillus bacteria, many of the strains are flagellates, meaning that they have motility. They can motor around inside of a living organism, first heading out from the gut to the lymph nodes and through the lymph system, potentially into some of the further organs such as the gallbladder or the pancreas, I think we even read. What's frightening about this is we've even discovered that they now have been able to manipulate flagellate bacteria to turn those little flagellators into micromotors. They can program that bacteria. I don't even think they need a real power source. They can use abundant substances within your body, such as calcium, I think we saw was one, and maybe salt was another, Na. Or they can use that to power themselves. So, you know, fast forward, what, 82, 92, 2002, 2012, that's 30 years right there, and then add another 35 years. They have been messing down dark, scary hallways with bloody handprints and screams without the public eye, all in the name of keeping you safe. It's just coming to the bubbling, percolating to the forefront now with this Pandemic X. But guys, they are so far along at this point, we really should be afraid. I hate to tell you, the more we yank on this sweater, this is getting to be like a really ugly sweater that is infested with genetically modified ticks. Run away, burn it, man, burn it. That's all you can do. There is no insecticide that is going to rid us of this plague. Anyway, part of the research here at Fort Detrick involves recombatant deribonucleic acid, or DNA for short, also known as gene splicing. The researchers are attempting to develop a better vaccine for anthrax. Oh, how did I guess? One of the most studied germ warfare diseases, because it is hardy and highly virulent. Anthrax is deadly to many domesticated animals, like cows, and it can be transmitted to humans. And the vaccine is painful and slow-acting. The Army has a contract with Molecular Genetics of Minnetonka, Minnesota, for recombatant DNA research into a vaccine for Rift Valley fever, which is a virulent North African disease, ding, that could be encountered by American troops operating in the Middle East or the Persian Gulf. Huh, the Persian Gulf. Wait a minute, 1982? We weren't in the Persian Gulf yet, were we? I thought the Gulf War started like in 88, 89, 90. I think I was already out of college. I don't know, that's weird. The Persian Gulf. I know we'd been in Iran hostage crisis, but I don't know. Maybe we had troops just floating around in the Persian Gulf. Anyway, Colonel Barquist is quick to note that the gene splicing work has been approved by the National Institute of Health. Oh, yes. They're keeping you safe as well, it seems. That oversees such projects, and we're just trying to use the tools provided by modern biology to come up with better vaccines, he explained. We'd like to see if we can use to our advantage the technological wave sweeping through biomedical research. Critics of the research at Fort Detrick have argued that there is little difference between offensive and defensive work. Ding! I've said that many times. Double-edged sword, anything that can cure you can kill you. And as far as the research goes, there is no difference, says Colonel Rehnquist. He agreed. As far as the research goes, there is no difference, but the U.S. is out of the biological warfare business, he said with a wink. I added that what we don't do are mass cultures or deliverable weapon systems. It is all about medical research. So when President Nixon's order shut down most of the biological warfare effort, good choice of words there, New York Times, much of Fort Detrick was turned over to the National Institute of Health. The National Institute of Health then set up a cancer research center on site. And they started researching something called green monkey disease. What? Now, wait a minute. This is such a mouthful. of information in this story. Like, it makes me dizzy as I'm reading it, because this is a very big missing puzzle piece. I can't even believe New York Times has this up in their archives live online from 1982. So the National Institute of Health took over a huge chunk of Fort Detrick, Maryland, the Department of Defense's Biological Warfare Division, to start researching cancer. Now, very interesting, as we fast forward 35 years into the future, I'd always warned you guys, when we first started talking about the switch-flipping technology and all these little nanobots in your blood, I said they probably were going to target something that a lot of people could line up behind and open their arms, because we're in the right mind. We'd just step right up and say, hey, I'll take your nanobots. Nobody. 35 years ago, I don't know one person who would have been keen to step up for quote-unquote nanobots in your blood. But now, even my dad, Lady Pitbull, the other day even said to me, it's everywhere, Jewel. All this stuff you were talking about cancer, curing this, curing that, it's everywhere. And it is. When I go to Buffalo with the Roswell Park, which is a big cancer institute, Roswell does get money from the Department of Defense. Roswell is just pumping the crap out of this new technology, this genetic therapy to be able to cure you of your cancer. We discovered in that one story about legions of nanobots to deliver cancer-curing payloads. When we dug into that story again, taking a second look at it, we discovered that those quote-unquote legions of nanobots were actually swarming flagellated bacteria that had been programmed and given a payload. It's frightening, people. All these pieces connect together, and it is beyond frightening. You know, we called the show last week Gut Snatchers, and I got to tell you guys, over the holiday weekend, my daughter and I went out. I think we found it on cable, but the connection was so crappy we had to cancel it. So we found it on Apple TV. Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978. I had her watch that with me, because I'll tell you, I never forgot that movie. That movie really affected me. I think I saw it like at 9. And I see a big correlation between that movie and what's happening right now. You know, it starts out with these little microbes from some distant planet. It looked like it could have been Mars or somewhere far, far away. It didn't have much of an atmosphere, but these little bacteria that were kind of in these little pouches, they made little noises, and they floated off into space, and they came down in the rain, and they landed on the leaves of the trees, and they had like this little cytoplasm around them. They were nice and moist, and then as they percolated on the tree leaves, they started to get these little roots, and they grew these pretty little flowers. But to me, it almost appeared that this bacteria was some sort of spore-forming bacteria, something that could make it through outer space, make it through the ultraviolet radiation of space to then produce some sort of life once it reached a favorable environmental condition. I think, isn't that even one of the theories on how life could have been sprouted here on Earth? That there was an asteroid that had some sort of space bore in it, and it seeded the planet. Well, guys, I mean, I think that when we look at some of this now biological warfare research, and it did include genetic modification of things, even back in the early 80s, and probably even before that, this is when it went public in the New York Times, and we look at what they're doing now, you've got to at least wonder. Even if you think that I have a tinfoil hat, because I know that there are a lot of people out there who do, can't stand listening to me rant and rave on a daily basis, but you got to at least look at this and go, And now this is the stuff that they're going to start rolling out in clinical trials to cure you, Johnny, Susie, and Nana. Critics of the research at Fort Detrick have argued that there is little difference between offensive and defensive work, and Colonel Barquist agreed. As far as the research goes, there is no difference, he said. But the U.S. is out of the biological warfare business. What we don't do are mass cultures or deliverable weapon systems. It is all just medical research. When President Nixon ordered the shutdown of America's biological warfare effort, much of Fort Detrick was turned over to the National Institute of Health, which set up a cancer research center. About 300 civilian and 200 Army personnel work at Colonel Barquist's laboratory, which has a current budget of $18 million a year. The Army coordinates the research with the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta and the World Health Organization, trying to come up with vaccines and treatments for various infectious diseases. Now, again, two more little tasty tidbits in that paragraph. One was how they coordinate their research with the CDC. Now, if anyone has ever seen, I don't know if he's a general or a colonel, the dude that is in charge of the CDC, his name came up the other day in that research on how to stop a pandemic. They wear uniforms, guys. They are part of some sort of military command at the CDC. So don't think that it is a purely medical research organization. They also mentioned the National Institute of Health and the World Health Organization. The National Institute of Health is a funding vehicle that they have utilized very far and wide across this country to help fund or co-fund a lot of this mad science gone mad that DARPA is putting out requests for proposals for out to the scientific and academic community. And the World Health Organization, of course, we know it's a grand globalist organization. The World Health Organization is also the organization that we are standing beside in our executive order from Obama about advancing the Global Health Security Initiative. Let's read a little bit of that, actually. November 4th, 2016, executive order advancing the global health security agenda to achieve a world safe and secure from infectious disease threats. For immediate release, November 4th, 2016, from whitehouse.gov. Advancing the global health security agenda to achieve a world safe and secure from infectious disease threats. By the authority invested in me as president of the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, I hereby order as follows. Section 1 policy is articulated in the National Strategy for Countering Biological Threats and implemented in the Presidential Policy Directive 2, or more affectionately known as the PPD-2, promoting global health security is a core tenet of our national strategy for countering biological threats. No single action can be prepared if other nations remain unprepared to counter biological threats, and therefore, it is the policy of the United States to advance the global health security agenda, which is a multifaceted, multi-country initiative intended to accelerate partner countries' measurable capabilities to achieve specific targets to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease threats, whether naturally occurring, deliberate, or accidental. Bing, bing. Think I need to be able to do a higher octave. Ding, guys, here it is in black and white out of the horse's mouth. I mean, come on. How could anybody deny what we are talking about right now? This is a very well-executed agenda. And it's beginning to really frighten me that this gut bacteria takeover, body control takeover, brain chemical producing takeover is all a part of this quote-unquote global health security agenda, protecting us against, quote-unquote, biological threats, of course, Clappy said, WMDs, could be considered a threat through CRISPR. The roles, responsibilities, and activities described in this order will support the goals of international health regulations. So are the UN blue helmets going to come get us and demand that we comply with their global health regulations? And will be conducted as appropriate in coordination with who? Oh, the World Health Organization, as well as the Food Agriculture Organization. Yes, Camille, that is the FAO. She sent me some documentation from the FAO last night. The FAO, which is part of the United Nations, ding, as well as the World Organization of Animal Health. Oh, yes, you mean the livestock that could potentially be targets of biowarfare out of Fort Detrick. Yes, those animal livestock. The Global Partnership Against the Spread of Weapons and Materials of Mass Destruction. Yes, yes, the ones that we were signatories to. And the International Crime Police Organization, more affectionately known as Interpol. Oh my goodness, yes, Interpol, to surveil it all. And other relevant organizations and stakeholders. So wait a minute, let's back this up. So as part of this global health security agenda that Obama inked in November of 2016, we are now in cahoots officially to surveil, monitor, and tackle potential infectious diseases and bioterror threats globally with help and support from the World Health Organization, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the World Organization for Animal Health, the Global Partnership Against the Spread of Weapons and Materials of Mass Destruction, the International Criminal Police Organization, and other relevant organizations and stakeholders. To advance the achievement for the targets and to support the implementation within partner countries, each executive department, agency, and office shall, as appropriate, partner, consult, coordinate with other governments, international financial institutions, international organizations, regional organizations, economic communities, and other non-governmental stakeholders, including the private sector. Guys, we have been sold on the biggest shit platter you have ever seen. And that shit is infected with biological material that is going to eat us whole. This is beyond, like, literally, my eyeballs are like strobing right now because I can't even believe the extent that these tentacles have gotten into this global conglomerate of takeover. We're going to be taken over by the medical industrial defense contract corporate academic pulsating AI surveillance brain that'll all provide them information in a dashboard, and they will be able to, as appropriate, I'm hoping, they say it in here somewhere, enforce this. Let's see who's responsible for enforcement. The council shall be responsible for the following activities. Provide by consensus policy level guidance to participating agencies on goals, objectives, and implementation. Facilitate interagency multi-sectoral engagement to carry out implementation, as well as provide a forum for raising and working to resolve interagency disagreements concerning the implementation. Review the progress toward and work to resolve challenges in achieving U.S. commitments, including commitments to assist other countries in achieving their targets. The Council should consider, among other issues, the status of the U.S. financial commitments in the context of commitment by other donors and the contributions of partner countries to achieve the targets. Now, we also found out in that document we were just reading, this biowarfare program is to protect us and our soldiers when they are in other countries such as our partners, other countries that we may have deployed to, all under the guise of the Department of Defense. The council shall not perform any activities or functions that interfere with foreign affair responsibilities of the Secretary of State. Ding. So don't screw it up there, Johnny. Including the responsibility to oversee the implementation of programs and policies that advance the initiative within foreign countries. Would that be like some sort of forced vaccination program too? Oh, I don't know. Cure Ebola in Africa? Well, maybe. The council shall consist of representatives serving at the assistant secretary level or higher from the following agencies. That would be the Department of State, yes. The Department of Defense, yes. The Department of Justice, yes. The Department of Agriculture, oh yes. The Department of Health and Human Services, yes. And the Department of Homeland Security, you knew it. The Department of the Management and Budget, the Office of Management and Budget, the United States Agency for International Development, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the Office of Science and Policy Technology, and any other such agency and agencies set forth above by consensus that are deemed appropriate. Agency roles and responsibilities in the furtherance of the described policy. I hereby direct agencies to perform the following. The heads of the agencies described above will make this committee and its implementation a high priority within their respective agencies. That would be the Department of State, Department of Justice, the Department of Defense, Department of Agriculture, Department of Health and Human Services, the EPA, the Office of Management and Budget, Homeland Security, blah, 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 CDC. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So it is your utmost priority for 2017, apparently. They are to also designate a senior level official to be responsible for the implementation of this order. They are also to designate an appropriate representative at the assistant secretary level or higher to participate in the Global Council and to keep the council apprised of their related activities undertaken within their specific agencies. They maintain responsibility for the agency-related programmatic function in coordination with the host governments, the country teams, and the in-country teams, all in conjunction with other relevant global agencies. They are to coordinate with other agencies that are identified in this order to satisfy programmatic goals and to further facilitate coordination of the country team implementation and the donors in host countries. The Secretary of State shall engage chiefs of mission, country teams, and regional and functional bureaus within the Department of State to promote with international partners and to facilitate country-level implementation of U.S. programmatic activities. Guys, they are turning the entire globe into a mad science, gone mad petri dish, all in the name of safety and securing our global health agenda with this mad science gone mad. Now, we're getting close to the end of the show here, and I am running out of time. I wanted to at least finish this New York Times article. So let's bounce back now. So that was 2016, right at the very end, less than 6 months ago. It has become a priority of all those very large divisions of the U.S. government to make this the utmost priority. But we find out in 1982, they already were mixing up some recombinant proteins, tinkering with DNA. Back down scary military dark hallways that weren't necessarily in the public eye and working with the World Health Organization. Colonel Barquist is quick to note that the gene splicing work that they are doing has been approved by the National Institute of Health's advisory committee that oversees the safety of such projects. The number of diseases that have been identified by the Pentagon as the most threatening in 1982 and those that are at the top of the research list for Dietrich include something called Rift Valley Fever, Lassa Fever, anthrax, botulism, hemorrhagic fever, and Marburg fever, also known as the green monkey disease. And I think that Marburg fever was the one that we had talked about a while ago that got out in the lab, and the monkeys got it down the hall or something without ever coming into contact with each other. It's one of those hemorrhagic fevers. For a time, the list of most threatening once included Legionnaire's disease as well, which is a pneumonia-like illness that killed 29 people in Philadelphia quite a number of years ago, and we found out now it's one of those bacteria that gets loose in the water system and the cooling system in a hospital quite often. Colonel Bunker said of the Philadelphia Legionnaire epidemic that it just illustrated what could happen in a biological warfare attack. So now let's fast forward 25 years. We have this global health agenda. We have DARPA now looking for someone to step right up and come up with a shape-shifting cure to stop Pandemic X, quote-unquote, from taking hold in the world to keep you, me, Nana, and Johnny all safe. We find out at the very end of the show yesterday that, yes, they are actually talking about it. We must prepare for CRISPR'd bioterror threats. CRISPR could potentially spread throughout a population's genetic code. And it's very frightening because DARPA is then looking for a way to lock down our biological code, just in case it accidentally on purpose something ever gets out into the wild. Well, if we needed something to illustrate how dangerous microbes could potentially be, I ran across a story out of Ars Technica over the weekend. It really made me pause for a few minutes. Titled, During a Hospital Stay, All Microbial Hell Breaks Loose Between You and the Room. Now, we saw that Elon Musk had taken up some MRSA, some antibiotic-resistant MRSA, to the space station in order for them to perform experiments on it. Because apparently, space seems to make bacteria more virulent. Though, I started thinking about that after the show on Friday, because I'm almost going to call a little bullshit on that. And I'll tell you why, because we also found out that UVC, which is supposedly the ultraviolet rays that are blocked from getting into the Earth's atmosphere by the quote-unquote ozone layer, that potentially could be degrading and maybe letting a little too much UVC through. But we found out UVC is utilized to sterilize hospital rooms. It is utilized to kill things. Now, we found out in the family of Bacillus that even the DOD irradiating anthrax doesn't necessarily kill it. Maybe that is why we have this epidemic of these super virulent pathogens in hospitals. You are more likely to get some horrible pathogen going into a hospital than you are from being out in the environment, especially if you are ill, elderly, or immunocompromised. But listen to this. During a hospital stay, all microbial hell breaks loose between you and the room. Within 24 hours, your microbes stake their flags in their new hospital territory. This was May 26, 2017, out of Ars Technica by Beth Moll. In the first few hours of a hospital stay, the microbes living on the walls. And remember, this isn't just hospitals, but my friend told me that he just heard something on BBC about hotel rooms and the disgusting microbes in hotel rooms that just coat every surface. So if your body is waging war with microbes in hospitals, imagine the scary microbes it might be waging in hotel rooms. In the first few hours of a hospital stay, the microbes living on the walls and on other surfaces of the hospital try to overthrow your skin microbiome. Ding, ding, ding. Now, I'm wondering if this is where the MRSA comes in. Now, when I was in the hospital for 9 days after having my daughter, and I was very sick, I was in bad shape, I got MRSA and brought it home. And I'll tell you, that's when I said, you know, they're talking about CRISPRing things or sending them up to space to find ways to kill more virulent bacteria like MRSA. I killed it with silver, nano silver or colloidal silver. And remember, raw honey, man, it's a little expensive, but you got to get the stuff that's called really raw honey with the chunks of the honeycomb all on top, and it's got like the wax underneath. You just need a little dab from a Q-tip. Don't double dip because you can infect your honey. But one little Q-tip in there, put it on anything on your skin that ails you as an infection. I'm telling you guys, it is like the miracle cure. So there's no need to like go spending bazillions of taxpayer dollars to come up with things that'll kill bad microbes. I mean, at least from a MRSA perspective. But at least that seems to be the standard way of things, according to a new study in Science Translational Medicine. For this study, researchers from the University of Chicago, where they do have one of the biggest hospitals, one of the busiest, led by microbiologist Jack Gilbert, he meticulously tracked the microbial comings and goings of a new hospital over the course of a year. You guys remember a couple years ago, we read a big study about the microbial comings and goings of the New York City subway system. They found all kinds of nutty stuff, and they were able to actually track things and its path through the subway. They started from before the hospital ever opened and kept research past when it was full of patients. and they set out to understand the microbial dynamics so that they one day can tweak them. And they envision a future probiotics, not pills or lotion, but surface sprays and wall treatments that can bulk up the beneficial bacteria capable of ejecting deadly pathogens and even prime helpful immune defenses in patients. And that would be from stuff they spray on the walls to affect you. Oh, my God. All right, guys, we are going to continue this insanity tomorrow. You can even believe it. An hour has gone by. I don't think I've even taken a breath. All right, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Tuesday is our live night. Up next, Ms. Lonnie Clark is up live. And tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern is live run with Game On. At 8, a brand new Barbarian Lounge. At 9, hopefully the boys from Primer Time. At 10, Anti-Media Radio. Maybe we will get lucky. And SM will be here. And at 11, we have Anti-Media Radio with Jake and DB. And make sure you stick around, too, because at midnight from Tuesday going into Wednesday, we have the brand new show. They will be in week number 3 called Traffic Report. And that is with John and Howie talking about human trafficking and shining a light on the cockroaches that have been in the news. And I don't know, my clock stopped. And I hope I am not talking over my bumper. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Tuesday is always an awesome day of radio. And I will catch up with you guys tomorrow. Here it comes. All right, guys. Everybody, take care.